Hello, everyone. This is Renette Senhams, Chew on This. Thank you so much for being here and listening in. As I put out on Facebook yesterday, we have an incredible guest, Dr. Sherry Tenpenny. And I would like to bring Dr. Sherry Tenpenny on here in just a second. Here we go. There you go. Hi, Dr. Tenpenny. How are you?
Good afternoon. I'm fine. Thank you.
Thank you so much for being here. And we were trying to figure out our sound here a moment ago. And of course, I didn't have my sound on. I can't believe it. It was an IQ test. I would have failed. But well, welcome. I'll tell you, it's such an eventful week. I almost don't know where to start these days. As you know, the information keeps coming in left and right about the developments. Around lockdowns and coronavirus and the vaccinations. And before we really start getting into these blades of grass, what I really would love, if you don't mind, is could you just give our viewers your background?
Sure. I am an osteopathic medical doctor. I have been in the practice of medicine since 1985, which, do the math, you can tell how old I am.
We won't do that.
Okay. My first career, I was board certified in emergency medicine and the director of a level 2 trauma center for 12 years. I moved to Cleveland in 1996 and I started an integrative medicine practice here in Cleveland, which I'm proud to say we've served patients from all 50 states and about 17 foreign countries to get them well and get off their pharmaceutical drugs. We have a sizable staff. I have another medical doctor, Dr. Janet Levitin, who is a board-certified pediatrician and also treats both adults and children in homeopathy. I have 3 nurse practitioners, a physician's assistant, a chiropractor, and a big staff of people that are just wonderful to work with. I think the shortest-term employee that I have is about 7 years.
Wow.
And so we've worked together for a really long time. And I got interested in problems associated with vaccines when I went to the National Vaccine Information Center meeting in Washington, D.C. in September of 2000. And I came home from that 4-day meeting and said, how did I miss this? I grew up in a chiropractic family. I was not vaccinated as a child. I had all the age-appropriate measles, mumps, rubella, and chickenpox. And I think I'm soon to be 63 years old, and I think that's the reason I'm as healthy as I am, and I can ride the pony pretty hard, and I never get sick, because my immune system was allowed to be exercised and do what it was supposed to do at that age-appropriate level, and my parents didn't vaccinate me with all those poisons. And part of that was my mom grew up in the Deep South, and she said we were too poor to be vaccinated, and my dad entered into the Korean War and got all of those shots to be in the military and never was so sick in his entire life. And so when they got married and I was born, they said, we're not doing that. And so by the grace of God, that didn't happen to me. And when I came home from that meeting and got in Washington, D.C., I said, I should probably look into this. This seems like I sat through 4 days of listening to medical doctors and scientists and lawyers and parents of vaccine injured kids. And I went, how did this sector of my education elude me?
Right.
So I started looking at the CDC documents and that whole, and after I read the first one, the general recommendations of vaccination, the 1998 version of that, I went, this is it. I mean, this is what the entire industry is run off of, this poorly written bad science paper. Maybe I ought to read a little bit more. Well, that little bit more has been 20 years and well over 40,000 hours worth of research and writing. And I've written 2 books and that are currently out of print because our publisher went out of business and I didn't have the main files. And and I've contributed chapters to other books, and I've written hundreds of articles that have been translated into, I don't know, 12 or 14 languages around the world. And so I'm kind of like the go-to girl on problems associated with vaccines. And there's always something new, unfortunately. There's always something bad happening, whether it's politics or laws or new vaccines or unbelievably bad adjuvants. And people keep having babies. Imagine that. And so because they keep having babies, there's always a new audience to talk to tell them you must ask what's coming through the needle. And with the COVID stuff that started back in March, I mean, I've taken a deep dive into that, obviously. And I'm very passionate about letting people know what's in these vaccines and why you must refuse no matter what, because these vaccines are deadly.
They're not vaccinations. We've never had anything like them.
Well, ostensibly, by definition, a vaccine is either a medicine it's classified as a medicine, but by definition, a vaccine is a molecule that's injected into your body that generates an antibody. Right. That by definition is what a vaccine is. And this does that. The problem is that the antibodies that it generates are going to be deadly, and it's going to take somewhere between 4 months and maybe 14 months before we see the full ravage of what's going to happen to people who are vaccinated with this vaccine.
That's scary. That's scary. So let's talk about that.
And it should be.
Yeah.
Because one of the things I've said, Renette, and you've heard me say it, and I know you take the same position.
Yeah.
We are at a critical juncture in time for all of humanity on a lot of different levels.
Yes.
And we are past the time of hand-holding, pussyfooting around, being careful to not offend anybody, and being so gentle with the snowflakes that they, you know, we just can't do it anymore.
No, this is definitely, we're at a crossroads. This is life and death. And, you know, I already have friends and loved ones I know who have received the vaccination. And we also have reports of doctors dying. We have reports here even locally at our local hospital, people getting the vaccination, and within, you know, 20, 40 minutes, they stroke out. The same thing in Sacramento, a doctor stroked out.
It's only the beginning. We've been doing these vaccinations in America for a month. And in 30 days, we have over 40,000 adverse events reported to the vaccine adverse event database. I got the document dropped to me yesterday. It's 172 pages long. We have over 40,000 adverse events. We have over 3,100 cases of anaphylactic shock. We have over 5,000 neurological reactions, which can range from headaches to numbness and paresthesias, to headaches to dizziness, to vertigo, to feeling like you can't feel your hands or your feet.
Right.
In 30 days. Now, and it's been estimated that less than 10% of adverse reactions that actually occur are reported to VAERS. So can you think of one single product in any industry, any industry, for as long as products have been made on the planet, that within 30 days we have 40,000 people complaining of side effects that not only is still on the market, but is full court press, and we've got paid actors telling us how great they are for getting their vaccine. And we're offering people $500 if they will just get their vaccine. And we've got nurses and doctors going, I got the vaccine. Well, they're not going to be so happy dancy folks when they start to get their Bell's palsy, when they start to get their neuropathies, when they get their cardiac arrhythmias, when they get their ITP, their autoimmune reactions, and causes them to die of a blood disorder. They're not going to be so happy then.
No.
But we're never going to see pictures of those people.
No, we're not. And when you do, they're scrubbed relatively quickly. You know, we had an incident here. A dear friend of mine was in our Sierra Nevada Memorial Hospital last week in the ER, and he saw a nurse coming in a wheelchair, and he thought maybe they were testing out the wheelchair or something. He didn't understand why she's in the wheelchair. And they put her in the bed next to him, and of course they, you know, pull the curtain around her. And the doctor comes in, and she can't swallow. Her throat is swelling up, and she can't swallow. And of course, then the doctor said, "Well, did you get the vaccination?" She goes, "Yeah, about 40 minutes ago." And he goes, "Oh yes, when I got the vaccination, I lost the mobility of my arm for 36 hours."
Oh well, that's okay. Everything but dead is okay.
But he said to her, "But good for you for getting the vaccination." And I'm thinking, she's going to anaphylactic shock. She's being injured. This is just the beginning. You don't know what the rest is going to be. And I was just floored that he was not concerned. Just the two of them have already been injured, and he's congratulating her. So, and that's the other thing that's really quite disconcerting for me, is that, you know, there is this MO of industry that if they can tell you, because they announced to us weeks ago, right? Don't be concerned. People are going to die, and they're going to get maimed. Just expect that. And I'm like, you know, they have this methodology that if they know that if they can just tell you ahead of what they're going to do, then they can do it. They have permission. And people are okay with this. And I just put out my Facebook page today. I said, you know what, guys? I said, if you had – a gun, and in the chambers was one bullet. Would you put that gun to your head or that to your child's head? Would you be willing to play a game of Russian roulette? Because when you go and get this vaccination, this is exactly what you are doing to yourself and your family members, not just when you get the shot immediately, but for months and months and months and months and months. It's a constant game of Russian roulette, because you don't know, and we're going to get into these details, you don't know what is going to trigger it, right? So what I would love to do is, I have here the different breakdowns, which you did a beautiful job, by the way, of breaking down what's in the Pfizer vaccination, what's in the Moderna, or what's not in the Moderna, because they don't have the ingredients, in the AstraZeneca. Could you just talk about, like, what are in these variety of vaccinations, what they are, what they can do, what they can't do, and what the dangers are? Can you speak to that?
Yeah, let me just pull the article up, because I know you're looking at it off of Vaxter, off of my website. Right. Hold on 1 second. Let me just get it in front of me so I can talk intelligently. Sure. It was a long day yesterday.
Oh, long. Yeah, that was a historically long day yesterday.
Well, yesterday, I just for me personally, I had gone to bed at 4 o'clock in the morning the night before, because I was up working on things. And I got up at 8 and I saw patients all day in the office yesterday from 8 until 6. And then I hopped in the car and drove an hour south from here and gave a talk last night to 450 people. Got home and ate dinner about 11:30 last night. Oh. So when I say it was a long day yesterday, on top of all the politics, that was my normal day of yesterday.
Right, exactly.
So the main thing I want to say about the ingredients has two things about the Pfizer vaccine. Three things that we have never, ever, ever seen in any other vaccine. And there are about 70 vaccines that are approved for use here in the United States. I know you've got an international market, an international audience. Some of the vaccines differ a bit by ingredients and by dosage schedules internationally. But here in the U.S., we've got 72 vaccines that are approved for use. Now, not all of them are used in all people. Like, for example, the cholera vaccine is approved, typhoid, Japanese encephalitis, anthrax. I mean, those are approved and they're used, unfortunately, in the military. But there are about 72 common vaccines of DPT, chickenpox, MMR, et cetera. We have never, ever, ever used messenger RNA in any vaccine, ever. We have RNA vaccines. The measles vaccine is an RNA virus. The polio virus is an RNA virus. But the difference is that in those vaccines, the virus is part of the vaccine wholly intact. So when your body generates an antibody, it's against the outer coating proteins of that virus. What we're doing with this new virus is we're taking a little piece of that virus's genetics, specifically associated with what's called the spike protein, and we're injecting that into the body, creating something called a non-neutralizing antibody, which in essence, instead of taking that messenger RNA and gobbling it up and making it go away, like what happens when you get a measles vaccine and you get a measles and it gobbles it up and makes it go away, this non-neutralizing antibody actually creates something called antibody-dependent enhancement. And they refer to that as ADE, like Apple, David, Elephant, ADE. And antibody-dependent enhancement actually allows that little piece of messenger RNA to start replicating on its own and go over and over and over again, creating these little pieces of virus spike proteins inside of our body for our body to create an antibody against. This is what Bill Gates has said. Yes, human beings can become their own vaccine manufacturing machine, because we interject this messenger RNA that binds onto your reverse transcriptase enzymes and starts replicating itself over and over again, creating more antibodies against the spike protein. Now, here's where it gets really, really interesting, Renette, is that spike protein has been shown in two other very specific ways to cause injury. Number one is that when you create an antibody to that spike protein, antibodies actually are designed, and when we write about them in the literature, we design it, we make it look like the letter Y. the letter Y. And the two arms of the Y, they call them FAB fragments, like Frank Appleberry, FAB fragments. And the stem down here at the bottom, the part of the Y, is the FAC fragment. These are the ones that grab hold of the virus and generally neutralize it. Hmm. When you look at the messenger RNA, it grabs hold of it, but kind of loosely binds it. And when this FAC fragment goes over and hooks onto the macrophage that is supposed to kill it, and it gets taken inside, that messenger RNA gets released. And that's where it starts to replicate over and over again. It's like having an on button, but no off button. And that whole thing, that whole mechanism I just described to you, they actually give it a name and they call it the Trojan horse mechanism because it allows that virus and that piece of that virus to get inside of your cells, start to replicate, and even get inserted into other parts of your DNA as a Trojan horse. Now, that's one of three mechanisms. The second mechanism is when you create this antibody, this non-neutralizing antibody to the messenger RNA, it actually, that stem, that FAC segment to that spike protein can actually go into your lungs and attach to the lung tissue and start developing what they call a diffuse alveolar damage, which is diffuse injury to the cells inside of your lungs where you breathe. Oh. It starts to break them down and destroy them. And what those antibodies do is that they cause various degrees of pus and bleeding and damage to your lungs. So as you get this vaccine, the messenger RNA, you create this antibody. The antibody carries the thing inside of the cells through a Trojan horse mechanism. The antibody itself goes and starts to damage lungs. And the third and even more sinister thing is that spike protein antibody can attack your macrophages. Now, there's two types of macrophages. There are type 1 and type 2. Type 1 macrophages, now macrophages are a type of white blood cell that gobble up the bacteria and viruses in your system that aren't supposed to be there. They're your Th1 pathway. They're your hypervigilant white blood cells. So when we get bacteria in our body all day long, from eating, brushing teeth, go to the bathroom, having sex, cutting your fingers, those white blood cells just come along and they gobble things up and make them go away. When you get pneumonia or some sort of serious infection, the type 1 macrophages are pro-inflammatory. And they show up at the infection and start creating cytokines and blowing whistles and bringing in all the things to try to kill off the infection. Very, very aggressive and very highly inflammatory, which is what you want. Mm-hmm. The type 2 macrophages are anti-inflammatory. So as you start to recover, the type 2 macrophages come in, tell the other guys to shut up. We're here to clean up the mess. So we clean up the dead debris of the tissue, the dead white blood cells, and all these things. So the type 2 macrophages and the type 1 work in concert. Type 1 kill off the infection and type 2 heal it. When you've got this antibody to the spike protein, which is the full intent and purpose of these vaccines, that antibody kills your type 2 macrophages. It attaches to them and inactivates them. So in the experimental animals that actually died of lung infection and inflammation, when they sacrificed them, what they found was that all of the lungs were filled up with all of these type 1 pro-inflammatory, highly cytokine types of macrophages and zero type 2 macrophages. What they did, and they sacrificed the animals that had not been vaccinated but had been sick, what they found that was in 2 days of getting sick without the infection, without the antibody, without the vaccine, the type 2 macrophages had come into the infection and started cleaning up the mess and started healing it as long as they didn't have the presence of a spike antibody. Wow. With the presence of the spike antibody, it killed them and didn't allow them to do their job. So those are three of probably seven mechanisms of how this vaccine is going to cause a problem. The antibody to the spike protein is going to destroy your lungs. The antibody to the spike protein is going to shut off your M2 anti-inflammatory macrophages. And the third, the antibody to the spike protein is going to loosely bind that virus or loosely bind the messenger RNA and drag it inside of your cell through a Trojan horse phenomenon, make it start replicating and having this process go on and on and on and on and on and on and on, because it's an on button without an off button.
This is just, I mean, this is why you're saying people are going to start dying within a year, year and a half. It's just.
And what, and it's really the, all of the mechanism, when you go back and look at all of the studies that go all the way back to 2002 of how they've tried to develop a coronavirus vaccine.
Right.
Is that it, you get these antibodies. So you go in, you get this antibody. It's not doing anything. It's floating around waiting for something to do. And then garden variety coronavirus shows up. And that's what activates the whole process. It's the re-exposure that leads to the antibody-dependent enhancement and all this accelerated autoimmune disease. There are 36 different coronaviruses in the environment, seven of them known to infect humans, and they've been around for 60 years. They're out there long before COVID ever showed up. So we're going to get these antibodies, these non-binding new antibodies, and it's going to a coronavirus is going to show up. And it's going to start killing people. And we're not going to see it right away. So it's not like the, I mean, some people are going to get the shot. And because of some of these other ingredients you want me to talk about, we're going to see anaphylactic shock. Yes. And people are going to die from that. And they're going to die from cardiovascular disease. The doctor, the one doctor that reported dying, got ITP, you know, which is a blood disorder, which is an autoimmune disease that that probably the spike protein antibody starts attacking the red blood cells, breaking it down, and you die from that. Mm. And so some people are going to die from the vaccine directly, but a large number of people are going to start to get horribly sick and get all kinds of autoimmune diseases 42 days to maybe a year out. And what are they going to do? These stupid doctors who say, good for you for getting that vaccine. What are they going to say? Oh, it must be a mutant. We need to give an extra dose of that vaccine.
Right.
Because now the vaccine, we instead of one dose, and two doses, we need three or four. Because the stupid physicians aren't taking the time to learn anything about it. If I can learn this sitting in my living room reading a 19-page paper and several others, so can they. There's nothing special about me. I just take the time to do it.
Exactly. That's what I've been asking doctors. Why aren't they taking the same time? So we have Krishna Murphy here asking, is there any references? Do you have your particular website that you could?
If you go to Vaxter, V as in vaccine, AXXTER.com, and you click at the top button, it says Dr. Tenpenny's blog. I've written a 6-part series on coronavirus. And these last two articles and everything that I'm talking about and referencing here, I mean, you know, of how the mechanism of action is part two, is coronavirus part six. And then there's part one, which is about the vaccines, and part two about the autoimmune reaction. So you can find it all right there. And inside of each one of these articles, all of the references are hyperlinked.
Perfect. Thank you. Well, and the other thing that was staggering to me is not just what you've just told us. It's hard to get me speechless that these ingredients do, but what's even more staggering is Moderna's ingredients have not even been released. Is that correct?
Well, we do have some whisperings of some of them, but we don't know all of them. And the three ingredients that just blow me away inside of Pfizer's vaccines, I can't even pronounce them.
Wow.
I'll do my best.
Okay.
4-hydroxybutyl, azanetalene, bis, hexane, 6,1-disyl bis, 2-hexene-decylonoate. That's one ingredient that's never been used in a vaccine ever before. There are three like that. So if you know from basic chemistry, I mean, from high school basic chemistry, each individual ingredient may be totally benign on its own.
Right.
But when you put them in a test tube and you all mix them together, it may blow up the lab.
Synergistically correct. Yes, right.
There's not only have we never tested these vaccines or these ingredients individually in human beings. I don't even think they tested them in animals, to tell you the truth. We don't have any synergistic toxicity in any of the three of those, not only to give it once, but to give it twice.
Right.
No long-term studies. We don't know 42 days. We don't even know 40 days out, Renette. We just started giving this 30 days ago. We do know that in, you know, of the 30,000 people that went through the clinical trials, some people died, some people dropped out. Some people wouldn't do the second one. There was a large percentage of people, I don't remember the percent off the top of my head, that were given what was called grade 3 and 4 side effects. And by definition, those are side effects that are so severe it impacted their ability to function in daily life.
Oh, my God.
The only thing these people care about in terms of side effects is, did it kill you or not?
Right.
Because if it didn't kill you and you ended up chronically debilitated with any list of autoimmune or neurological diseases, not a problem. We just made you into a customer for life. And we got this big book of business over here, all these drugs to treat your systems forever. This is a multi-trillion dollar play. And that's one of the reasons why.
Mm-hmm. Right. And the thing that's amazing is that we still don't have a vaccination for AIDS, for cancer, for MERS, for SARS. I mean, so it's staggering. And then, and not do we have a vaccination supposedly for coronavirus 19, all right, within a matter of a few months, but we have several vaccinations in a matter of a few months for coronavirus 19. I mean, this right there should be a red flag to everybody.
Well, and what was interesting is AstraZeneca's, you know, so we've got the Pfizer vaccine, we've got the Moderna vaccine, and we've got AstraZeneca's. Now, when you take a step back, when they first decided to give all of these drug companies 100% liability protection for everything they make. So if any one of these ingredients, any one of these vaccines kill you, no recourse, you have nobody to sue. Mm-hmm. If it puts you in the intensive care unit for months, no problem.
So, you know, we're getting wind here that our governor here in the state of California, Newsom, is going to be possibly bringing in military and really pushing getting everybody vaccinated. And they're definitely threatening the hospitals right now. They're saying that they're not vaccinating quickly enough, and they're threatening removing their funding of different sorts. And we also have reports of nursing homes that are actually giving the vaccination to people who are on their deathbed just so they can bump up their numbers. I mean, that kind of stuff. So talk to me about our Western allopathic medical system. What happened? What went wrong?
Well, it didn't start with COVID.
No, it didn't.
You know, no. I've been saying for decades, somebody needs to give it a good swift mule kick and kick it off the cliff and let it fall to the bottom and crash and burn, and then pick up the pieces that are of value and start over. Right. I mean, it's just gotten to be, you know, it all the way goes back actually to the 1935 Social Security Act here in the U.S. Mm-hmm. is when they passed the Social Security Act. And they started to develop the Vaccine for Children's Fund, and they started doing all of those things back in that was in 1960 something. And then in the early 1990s, when they started developing unlimited funds for the vaccine system. And when we started giving vaccines to children at birth in 1991 from the hepatitis B vaccine, and we started seeing an accelerated autoimmune and cancer disorders in adults and children. I mean, it's been a growing Freddy monster for a very long time. And somebody put in there, yes, it started with the Flexner Report in 1920s. Yeah. And it probably started even before that. It's probably started back in the 1800s when they put Sybil Weiss in prison and beat him to death because he dared to tell the doctors to wash their hands. I mean, who knows how far back it went? It's just, and someone just wrote, medicine is the youngest of all and the most dangerous and the most deadly of all of them. Mm-hmm. But I think that when Rockefeller took over the medical schools, and it just got horrible, and I don't know. You know, I graduated from medical school in 1984, and between 84 and I'll say 2004, you know, those 30 years, right? 40 years. Oh my. I mean, we went from respecting the body and doing anatomy and dissection, you know, to doing virtual anatomy online. And we went to algorithm driven medicine, you know, symptom pill, symptom pill, symptom pill, symptom pill. I say the last of the thinking doctors died in the 1940s. I mean, they started the British Medical Journal and the Lancet as a communication tool of going, hey guys, I just saw 20 patients that had this and I treated them with this. And, you know, 18 out of 20 of them got better. Does anybody know why that would have been? What's the anatomy and the physiology behind why that worked? And they tried to think it through because doctors are supposed to be experts in anatomy, physiology, and biochemistry. And instead, somewhere along the way, we decided that those things weren't important. What was important was matching up a symptom with a pill, and pharmacology and surgery was what it was about to be a doctor. Not right. thinking through, you know, what is the underlying thing? Because there's only two things that make people sick, Lynette. There's only two. There's only two, Renette. There's only two. One is an excess of something, too much toxicities, too much, you know, bad food, you know, all those things, or an excess of something like a vitamin, mineral, nutrient, lack of love, lack of exercise, lack of sleep. It's only the two things. And we made it so complicated. Right. And if we just figure out that when somebody has a pathology du jour, name it, the source code starts in something missing or overpowering your biochemistry that makes your physiology start to fizzle and burn like your car engine running and smoking, mm-hmm. and that shows up in your body as a symptom. Mm-hmm. Well, what we do instead in Western medicine is when we see that smoke coming out of our car engine, instead of going, hey, what caused that fire? Mm-hmm. We go pour water on it and shut it down. It's right. like walking into your house at night and hearing a fire alarm, and you'd rip that battery out and throw it in the trash can and say, well, that was making a lot of noise, right. and never looking for the fire. Right. Because as long as we've got enough suppressive medicine to shut down the noise, mm-hmm. We never look for the underlying cause of the fire.
Well, and you know, in medical school, how much time do you guys spend on nutrition?
None.
Right.
Maybe a couple hours.
Isn't that astounding?
It's horrifying.
Yeah. So I'm going to make a premonition here. I've been talking to different folks, and I'm getting this, you know, through the grapevine about the possibility of really starting to ramp up vaccinations in the state of California, and I'm sure other democratically led states. And I was saying, well, how in the world are they going to convince so many people to get vaccinated? And the person said, well, you know, one of the things they're really talking about right now is forgiving student loans.
Oh, wow.
You know, that ball and chain for young people was put there by design, right? So I'm like, oh, of course, because now they're all living home. They don't have a job. They have no hope. They have this financial ball and chain. And of course, and they're convinced the vaccinations, because the education system, including the higher education system, has taught them the vaccinations are safe. Autism, the link between autism and vaccination, there isn't any. And then on top of that, there's some other really interesting developments that have been going on. So we have that. I've been hearing that. The other thing is, of course, we now have more people than ever who are now living in their cars, losing their homes, you know, and their apartments and so on, don't have a job. And so they're going to be very, very desperate. But this is another really interesting little fact is that a few months ago, Governor Newsom announced that they're going to be doing a moratorium on rents. And basically what they were going to do was they were going to make it so you did not have to pay your rent up to, for a few months. If you could pay maybe a quarter of it, that would be great. But it's not that you're not paying the rent. It's just that you don't have to pay it right then. You have to pay it later on. What was really fascinating is that when a person applies to this program, do you know who the leaseholder becomes of that lease?
I'm terrified. Who?
The CDC.
No.
Yeah. The CDC is now the largest leaseholder in America.
Oh, God.
And you know what I bet's going to happen? They're going to say, oh, you guys, you don't have to pay all that back rent. We know you don't have a job and an income, and you've absolutely eviscerated your savings account. So don't you worry. But you know what? We'll forgive you. All you need, you know, it is a little pokey. And we've got you covered. The CDC.
Oh, my gosh. That is horrifying.
Yes.
That is horrifying.
Yeah. So as soon as I saw that, I was like, what is up here? Why in the world is the CDC becoming a landlord? Right? Because they want, this is all, they're not, we're not going to capitulate on our own, right? We're going to have to be forced into it. So it's either going to be student loan debt forgiveness. It's going to be, I have no job. I have to put food on the table. Or it's going to be, gosh, thanks for that moratorium on my rent. But now, Governor Newsom, now that you've destroyed every business out there and that I can't even go job hunting because the jobs don't exist, I can't pay my back rent and I'm going to become homeless. What's the big deal over a vaccination? What's the big, just, it's just a couple shots. It's horrific.
Except when we take a step back and we look at, you know, when all of this money trough stuff started coming, there were 219 vaccines in the pipeline development.
Right.
You know, just for COVID vaccines alone. Before we went into COVID, you know, a couple of years ago, there were over 200 vaccines in the developmental pipeline for other types of vaccines, for all kinds of things, mental disorders, periodontal disease, high cholesterol. I mean, of course, there's nothing could go wrong with any of those things, right?
No.
So this is really, and you know, it's so interesting, Renette, because, you know, I've known about all these things for years. I mean, actually, I've said this on a few interviews, is that I kind of grew up on this stuff. I mean, I had an uncle that was way into like studying the stuff about the Illuminati and the Council of Foreign Relations and all these different things way back when I was a kid. And I had my family had a whole library on all these types of things that were all labeled as conspiracy theories and things you sort of whispered about. So I've known about this stuff for a long time. But when you start talking about up until recently, meaning in the last year, when you talked about vaccines as it took a long time to move the needle to this far for people to say, to start to question the religion of vaccination and the belief in vaccines, because we have a multi-generational indoctrination that's 200 years old of safe and effective, safe and effective, safe and effective. It's like saying salt and pepper, salt and pepper, salt and pepper. Just because you say it over and over again makes it true.
Right.
And that they're so necessary. And if you don't get your kids vaccinated, I mean, they just might die or something. Right. Or you're just such a heretic. So it took me 20 years to move the needle from here to here. In the last 9 months, we moved it to here.
Right.
Of people questioning, looking at these things and starting to say, what's going to happen? I've been saying for at least 5 years now, they will never make this mandatory, but they will make it so unbelievably difficult to live.
Right.
That the vast majority of people will roll over. They floated this this in Argentina about 5 years ago, that you couldn't renew your driver's license, renew your passport, unless you showed a completed vaccination record as an adult.
Yeah.
Well, what else could they add to that laundry list? You can't get groceries. You can't even have people deliver groceries to your house unless you're vaccinated to protect the person who's delivering the groceries to your house, for heaven's sakes. I mean, you can't get gas for your car. You can't access your bank account or your bank money unless you've got your little micro dot tattoo in your hand of where they can scan it for you. So we have now fully come full circle in understanding that vaccines are now, and people listen to this closely, always have been a method of mass destruction, a method of depopulation, a method of creating customers for life. When they started giving hepatitis B vaccines at birth in 1991, it was a carte blanche. Fannie barred the doors, because in 1986, they were given complete liability protection. In 2005, their liability protection went far beyond anything that we've ever seen before. For everything COVID-related, the tests, the injection, the sites, the people, everything. And now people understand this is truly a control weapon, and a weapon to make you be either make you chronically sick or kill you or put you into subjugation and in the transhumanism movement for the rest of your life.
You know, my partner and I we've had some hard conversations with family members and friends saying, look at guys, we're giving you all the information, including what you've provided on your Baxter website. You need to educate yourself about this vaccination, and you have to understand, and this is some hard love, but if you take the vaccination and you get maimed and you can't care for yourself, we're going to tell you now, we're not going to care for you. We're not going to be burdened by the ball and chain of your irresponsibility and stupidity for going along with this and being vaccinated and being a guinea pig. And we've told this to our family members, like, please don't do it, because if you get maimed and you can't care for yourself, we're not going to do it. We're warning you. And so the family knows, and that's actually made them think twice. But
and what was their response?
Well, there's a couple who are like, there's no way we're going to do it. And there's a couple who've said, send me the information. I have other dear friends. So there's my partner who they've taken the vaccination, and their children have taken the vaccination. And we're just like,
children?
Yeah. Adult children have taken the vaccination.
Okay.
Right. And so we're just like, you know, because, you know, we're ones when family or friends are sick, we'll bring a meal, we'll go get, you know, the medications, we'll run errands for them. We're like, we're not going to do that. We, you know, your decision is not going to become our burden. And this is really tough love, but you have to understand you are on your own. And it's, you know, it's a tough decision and, you know, to make in the conversation to have, but we're doing it because we're really trying to, you know, create a shot across the bow of like, look at guys, this is extraordinarily, you know, extraordinarily important that you understand what you're doing. And, you know, in fact, gosh, I have some other little questions here.
You know, what kind of to go with that? I mean, I think that so many people are in such a deep coma over all of this stuff. The fear has taken away their brain. And the only way to wake them up is with those sort of strong conversations. I've said a couple of times, the only way that we can wake people up is to get a pan out of the drawer and a wooden spoon and bang it in front of their heads.
Yeah. Well, I actually just did that recently to our city council members a few weeks ago. They're making a decision to fine everyone in businesses on the street for not wearing a mask in downtown little tiny Nevada City. And I was like, are you crazy? I mean, 95% of people are wearing their masks, for God's sake. And so they were ignoring us, and they ignored the 84 letters that came in against this idea and the 12 that supported it. And we literally were banging our pots and pans in front of the mayor and vice mayor's home and then city hall, and they still voted for it. And let me tell you something, Sherry, ever since then, do you know what's happened to our beautiful, historic, lovely, tourist-friendly town, downtown? It's dead. People won't go to it. They go to our neighboring town, Grass Valley, because they know they're not going to be getting a fine, right? And it was such a nasty message to send out to visitors and to the business owners during the holiday seasons. And I keep saying to people, you know, economic loss equals death, right? We know for every $5 to $25 million in economic loss, you lose a person to depression, to suicide, whatever, right? The suicide rates with the children, the teenagers has skyrocketed. The depression, I mean that now the homelessness, all of this. And I keep going back to, why is it that those lives don't count? It's such a myopic lens. It's very, very dangerous. So, you know, we have a lot of lawsuits pending, but by the time these lawsuits even get through the courts, and I don't know where that's going to land, we're going to have a lot of dead people, even for, I think, what is it? For every percentile of job loss you lose across the United States, you lose 37,000 lives.
Wow.
Yeah. And so, again, I go back to, in like our own Nevada County Health Department, over a month ago, I did a public records request on them saying, I want all the vital statistics of the last 3 years. I want to see the flu deaths. I want to see suicides, drug overdoses, so on, just everything, every single month of the last 3 years. And I want to compare them to this last year. And you know what they said to me? We went back and forth and back and forth, and they wouldn't put this in writing, by the way. They had the legal counsel actually just call me and have the conversation and say, oh no, it was just too much to put in writing. And what they told me was that, well, Renette, we actually don't have that data. We're not looking at that data. And I was like, okay, this means there's one of two things. Either you have the data and you don't want to share it with us because it's damning, or you really haven't looked at the data and you are actually making decisions in the dark, completely blind. Because that is one reason why I stepped off the council back in July, was because at that point in time, I was asking for months, like, hey, what's the data? What's the end goal? What's the metrics? What are we shooting for here? And they kept hinting, but would not say directly because they didn't want to, was that basically, Renette, this county has a very low herd immunity. And what they really meant was like a vaccination rate. We were like one of the lowest vaccination rates in the state of California, the lowest, if not the whole entire country. And I said, well, so what you're talking about is, you know, vaccinations. I said, because if you're talking about herd immunity, then don't you want us to go out and boost our acquired herd immunity? Go out there, get the vitamin C and eat healthy, get exercise, you know, have the government actually distribute vitamin C and D, right, and zinc tablets and so on. And there's absolutely no discussion. And there is definitely a methodology within government. And that is, if they don't mention suicides, depression, job loss, right, overdoses, they believe that if they don't mention these words, that they're not responsible to them. That's the methodology. So, you know, so it's just so upset. And by the way,
I mean, you almost, if you don't laugh about it, you go shoot somebody.
I know. I just tempting, you know, so and our newspaper finally did get out of the California CDC website. They actually were able to uncover that 100% of all of our deaths so far, which is rather minimal really in this county, have been in the nursing homes. Now, let me tell you what's also going on. I'm now getting, because I have people coming to me, as you can imagine, who are in the medical world. And they're telling me, Renette, we're holding on to our COVID patients longer in the hospital just so we can keep the numbers up. Renette, we are delivering COVID patients, those who are on the very beginning and are very infectious, but could go home if you just give them the protocols. But what we're doing is we're taking them, or those who are on the end of their life because of COVID, and we're actually sending them to the nursing homes. And we have a place here called Spring Hill Manor that has had 50% of all the deaths have been in this one nursing home, which should be triggering actually an investigation. And what I've been told is that they have in this one wing, they have the COVID patients on one side of the hallway and all the rooms. And then on the other side, they have the normal patients, right? The nursing home patients. And in the middle is the hallway with a red strip of tape down the middle. And that is the only thing that is separating the COVID from the non-COVID patients.
A piece of striped tape on the floor?
Yeah, that's it. In the same wing. So this kind of stupidity, insanity, right, is I will not partake in. I've been saying over and over to everyone around here, I'm like, you guys, you're committing crimes against humanity. This is actually a genocide. And let me tell you, when World War II happened and it became known to the public that these concentration camps actually existed, it took some people decades to actually recognize and admit it happened because it was so horrific. We did not believe that our humanity could do that to one another, right? We could not do that. And we're doing it. I'm seeing it. And our medical workers right now are beside themselves, but they're afraid, as you know, they're afraid to speak out because you've been subjected, right, to ridicule. I've been subjected. We have, you know, Dr. Christian Northrup. Anybody who speaks up, even Senator Scott Jensen, who's the head of the COVID chair, you know, commission for the United States and is actually a 35-year-long practicing MD, has been eviscerated, and even the medical board has threatened to remove his license as a doctor. I mean, this is what we are up against. This is not normal. This is, from what I can see, is a genocidal program. But by the time we really realize it, most people will have been vaccinated, not because they were choosing to do so, but because they really had no other, you know, alternative. And you are very familiar with the credit, the social credit program of China. And I've been saying to folks, guys, China's handprints and communism is all around this right now. And I didn't speak about China or communism a few months ago. I talked to my best friend saying, how often have you heard me complain about China and communism? They're like, never. I'm like, well, I am now because I'm aware of it. And here we have China, who, by the way, had a wonderful New Year's Eve, and they weren't closed down. They were out in the streets celebrating, and they haven't been vaccinated. Isn't that amazing? And so you have them there, but they do have the social credit system, which is what you're talking about. It actually gives you a ranking according to, are you vaccinated, right? What's your political, you know, standing? Who do you hang with? Do you rent video games? What kind of movies are you watching? What kind of clothes do you wear? What kind of food are you eating? Are you exercising? Did you jaywalk? And according to this credit rating, the lower the credit rating is, the less freedom you have, which we now have millions of Chinese who can't get on planes, can't get on buses, can't get on railways, right? They can't go into stores. And some of them, it's all through their app. Even Silicon Valley announced this a few months ago. We're making it for Americans. We're so excited about this. And there's an app, and the app will be either orange or green when you go to leave your apartment building. And if you are orange, you have to stay in your apartment building and you can't leave. So when I say to people, if you want to know what our future looks like, all you need to do is look at China. And you have Governor Newsom, who is definitely a Chinese foot soldier. This man is so involved with the Chinese Communist Party, it's not even funny, including the billion-dollar mask deal that was completely, right, swept under the rug when it was discovered. But he wouldn't even admit to it, you know, happening. He wouldn't even show, right, transparently. We wouldn't even show what the deal was. We've got some serious serious issues. And I'm trying to say to folks, like, look at guys, no one's going to tell you, but General Flynn and General McInerney have. We're in war. And this is not a war of tanks and bullets and bombs. It's not. It's an advanced war. It is a silent war. It is, and they've said this, it is disinformation, misinformation, propaganda, right? Brainwashing. And as you probably know, Dr. Bregin, B-R-E-G-G-I-N, well-known psychiatrist, he's considered the conscience of a psychiatry, has been absolutely calling out the public health departments and saying, look at guys, we know for a fact, it's a very respectable field called fear appeal in public health policy. And what it is that what public health departments do is they literally go out there and they find something to create a fear within the population that if you don't do this, you may be in harm's way. You could die, you could be become ill, whatever, right? And they use this and they keep hitting that message over and over and over again until you go from fear into anxiety, until you finally build up so much pressure, as you know, you can't think straight. You can't take in new information. And of course, you want to alleviate that pressure. So you will capitulate and do whatever they say, like take a vaccination or do this or do that, right? And so he's actually calling them out saying, how dare you do this? And this is the most important story of all. I'm going to add another layer to this. Dear friend of mine, Valentina's, owns a restaurant, Valentina's. She's been one of the few really trying to push back. And she, 7 years ago, had a 103-year-old German customer who was a regular customer, would see her. And she told Valentina a story that was not, it didn't strike her then, but it strikes her now, of the significance. And this 103-year-old German woman, when she was a child, personally knew Adolf Hitler.
Wow.
And she said, we so loved him. He was like this, you know, beloved father figure. And, you know, he was very benevolent and charismatic. And we, on Sundays, we'd have balls and dinners and dances for the guards and for us. And we just thought he was wonderful. She goes, but do you know how he convinced us initially to hate the Jews? He told us that they were diseased and that being subjected to them, being near them, could infect us and kill us or our children. Wow. And it was what was equivalent to the German public health department that was pushing that propaganda. Once he convinced people, the Germans, that Jews were diseased, everything else was easy. Everything else was easy because they were in that mode of fear and they were controllable and they were programmable. And that is what Dr. Bregin is pointing out. And to our public health departments across the United States and actually around the
world. Well, once they controlled us with the whole fear, the myth of the mask, mm-hmm. the myth of social distancing, the allowing of contact tracing, which is legalized spying, which is right out of the Nazi Germany brown shirt play movement.
Right.
Once they were able to do that and get the whole frickin' world to roll over and be obedient and compliant, it's just a mask,
right?
And a lot of the people who were sincerely so unbelievably afraid of getting sick because they were going to die, the rest is easy, just like the story you just told. And the fact that it's been so shocking to me that from the beginning, you know, back in August or September, I took on the mask issue big. I mean, we partnered with Hugs Over Mask CA. We did a lot of training with them. We started to help start chapters. We did all this. And my motive behind that was that if we can't get people to refuse to wear a mask, they're never going to refuse any of the rest of it.
That's right.
If we can't get them to understand the physiology behind how they're harming themselves and not helping anybody, not protecting anything from anybody, and this whole social thing, well, I'm not doing it for me, I'm doing it for you. Mm-hmm. BS. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, and if we couldn't get people to understand that, then the next rollover is just take the vaccine.
Right.
And, you know, the powers that be, you know, the Klaus Schwabs of the world and, you know, the people all at the upper echelon of the World Economic Forum, they're not stupid people.
No. Oh, no.
And they've got at their disposal any scientist, PhD, government official anywhere around the world that money can buy. And they can put together teams of people to plow through the medical literature and to sit around and have meetings to decide what is the best way. How do we use everything that's already been published to cherry pick it, to move our agenda forward. That's why when you go to weforum.org, when they say we've been working on this for 50 years, they're not kidding.
No, they're not.
And is that because they have thousands of people, Minnie's little desk job people that are doing research and writing reports, and they've got people collating the information to the top. Mm-hmm. So right now what we are experiencing on a global basis is the consolidated work of literally the best and the brightest from their side of the table. Mm-hmm. They've figured out how to cherry pick the most egregious stuff. They found out to what messaging, what verbal messages. When I wrote my first coronavirus article back in March, you know, it starts out by saying at the top, I'm going to paraphrase it, but something like, unless you've been living in a cloistered monastery for the last several weeks, you have been hit by 2.1 billion messages about the fear of this virus. Mm-hmm. Smash and burn with the mainstream medical, with the mainstream media. They have been able to put together the ultimate plan for their ultimate agenda, which is genocide, depopulation, making us into slaves through the transhuman movement, and as you so rightly described, the social credit score system, to get us all vaccinated, to get away from paper money, to become the cashless society. So by a flip of a switch, they can control what you have access to. Mm-hmm. And the mark of the beast is a real thing for those of you who are Christian and spiritually inclined and you haven't read your Bible in a while. Now is the time.
I'm not a Christian. I've never read the Bible, but I keep saying, you guys, this is the mark of the beast. How is it that I'm not a Christian, not religious whatsoever, spiritual, but not religious, but I'm concerned about this being the mark of the beast, but my Christian friends don't seem to be concerned at all. And that's the other thing. I asked my stepmom a few weeks ago, I said, why is it, what happened to all the ministers, all the priests? They used to be the rebels in the old days, right? They were the ones that would hide people or hide the horses and, you know, do things that have the underground railroads. I said, but they're the ones actually having free vaccination clinics. Just pull your car up and we'll vaccinate in your car. I said, what happened? And she said, well, you know what? She goes, it's actually from their schooling. When they go into the schooling to become a priest or minister, this is what they have been getting taught. They're taught not to be the rebels. They're taught to go along with the government mandates and not to question authority, because they're actually being taught these things. And I was just floored, but it certainly did explain it.
Now, and then we have the destruction of God in our churches. We took prayer out of schools in 1963. We ramped up the ability to get, you know, to have a 100 million abortions. You know, we have access to any sort of nefarious sort of thing. When the shutdown happened, what was the first time ever in the history of humanity? What did we stop? Going to church. Yeah. We violated the Constitution and our right to civilly get together and aggregate. We quickly from 50 people to 20 to 10, because if there's only 10 people in a space, you can't stand around and try to figure out what's going on and form an insurrection. Well, we took, you know, everything.
And the thing that's crazy now, too, is that here we have people thinking that they're going to go back to a normal life, right, if they just get the vaccination. And now they've already said, you still got to wear your mask. You still need a social distance. And they have not. They have said that we can't really say for sure that it's not going to continue to spread anyway. So, and we even had a nurse friend here, Sierra Nevada Memorial, who, you know, got vaccinated and a few days later got COVID and got sick. So can you speak to me about the fact that there's no proof of it's going to stop the spread? Can you speak to that?
This goes back to what we were talking about with the antibodies.
Right.
In fact, if anything, you know, we're starting to see these pop up here and there like little popcorn things about these mutants. The one question they're not asking are the people who have been, you know, tested and found to have a mutant virus. Mm-hmm. Have you been vaccinated with the COVID vaccine? Mm-hmm. Nobody's asking that question. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So it's just turn the crank and make it worse.
Well, what we have seen this interesting is like, I barely go out these days. I pretty much in my home body. And when I do, it's highly limited, a few places. And I really don't wear my mask. And my small pod of friends and family, we're not mask wearers. And we're not getting sick at all. Now, I have a lot of friends and family who are mask wearers, and they have gotten sick with COVID.
Well, the CDC's own data says that of the people that get sick, of the people who are getting sick, over 80% wear masks all the time or most of the time.
Right.
the people who are not getting sick don't wear a mask.
That should be a dead giveaway.
Because everything that they've contrived here is the opposite. If they say up, the real answer is down. If they say wear a mask, the real answer is don't wear a mask. If they say left, the real answer is right. They've got everybody convinced in every area of their life. Think about the complete, you know, when you go back and you watch that We Form video at the beginning, we have got to change everything on this planet and recreate it in the way to have the planet that we want.
That's right.
Which everyone should say, who the hell is we?
Yeah. Yeah.
Right?
Right. Well, Sherry, I want to say thank you so very much. And I've said this a few times, because we have a regular Zoom call with you and some other amazing folks. And I just keep saying that you and Dr. David Martin and Dr. Christian Northrup and Amani and Pam Popper and Peg, all these amazing individuals who I now get to see regularly, you are the silver lining around these dark clouds. And your work is absolutely seminal, important. You are a bright light in these dark days. And I just want to thank you, because I know that you all, including myself, take a lot of crud. But as I say to folks, this isn't fun. We're not doing this because it's fun and we're making money from it. We're doing it because we know what's right. And so I just want to thank you so very much for being just an amazing human being.
Oh, well, thank you so much for having me on and for all of your guests and everybody that's listening. You know, thank you so much, Renette. It's been a pleasure to getting to know you through that group, because I didn't know you before.
I know
at all. And so now, you know, it's so great in that group because, you know, it's sort of it's for those listening, it's a mastermind group of people that get together. We get together once a week and talk about pretty high level things and strategy. And strategy by definition is how can we best be effective?
Right.
In terms of getting this message out and empowering each one of you who are listening, because we're just sowing seeds. We're just setting it out there. Now it's incumbent on each one of you to take these little factoids, go to my website, go to Vaxxer.com, read the articles on COVID. There's a little icon at the bottom. You can print them out and you can hand them out to people, you know, and they're all hyperlinked to medical journal articles. And, you know, go to vaccine. Another thing you can do is to go to vaccineu.com, vaccinetheletteru.com, and click on the catalog at the top. We now have four of our 8-part course that's available online about the myth of the mask, about contact tracing and social distancing, the very, very important lesson about PCR testing and CT values, and right. The same virus, different day. I mean, you really have to understand that cases mean nothing.
That's right.
And all four of those courses are available for free. All you have to do is go and register. You just register and you can start watching this thing and download all of the information from the PDF files. You can't download the videos, but you can download the rest of it. So if you go to vaccineu.com, get the courses for free, just register. You can follow me on Twitter or Parler at BusyDrT, and Instagram is just Dr. Tenpenny. And, you know, but Vaxxer's where all the headsy information is. For all you guys that want the science-related articles, VaccineU and Vaxxer's the place to go.
Fabulous. Well, thank you so much for shining your light. We'll probably do this again maybe another month or two, because I'm sure there'll be more updates on their way. And yeah, just thank you so much. And everyone who've been watching us today, thank you so much. Please, if you can, share this link widely. It's meant for especially my town of Nevada County, Grass Valley, Nevada City. My objective is to bring information so you can make your own educated decisions. And so thank you so much for educating us, Sherry. I so greatly appreciate it.
Thank you so much. Have a great day.
I will. You too.